I brought, there's extra copies of the source page that I gave out last week, so if you didn't get one, you're welcome to. And the other thing that I brought was a copy of this chart, because a few people said that they didn't get it last year or the year before, don't have it. So the other sheet is a copy of this chart that you can hold on to and keep and sort of stay with us for the next... If you got it from me, you've got it already. It's the same one. It hasn't changed much in 3,000 years. That's the map of the settlement of Israel at the time of Yeshua, and it pretty much stays the same overall focus and orientation throughout Sefer Shoftim. So we're going to stay with this map through our study of Sefer Shoftim. When we get into Sefer Shmuel, we get to change maps. So we'll get there Bezrat Hashem one day. But, yeah. So we started to look at chapter 20 and 21, which we read together and looked at together, which is the division of, or the allocation of the cities for the Levium and the cities of refuge, the Arei Miklat. Or actually in reverse, the cities of the Arei Miklat first, and then the cities of refuge, the Arei Miklat, being chapter 20, and then Parakop Aleph, chapter 21, the story of the Arei Levim. We raised a number of questions. A couple of questions that we're not going to address right now, which is the whole notion, the whole context of the Rotzeach B'Shogeg, this manslaughter or accidental murderer, running to the Yermaklot. What does he do there, and how does he get there? More importantly, why does he stay there until the death of the Kohen Gadol, which is a very odd kind of link. So we will address that in our last unit, if you will, of this discussion. What I wanted to focus on today is the setup of the Arei Miklat and the Arei Levim. And if you remember, we saw that there are six Arei Miklat that are designated in the land of Israel, in chapter 20, three on the east side of the Jordan that were established by Moshe at the end of his life, in Parshat Maaseh, and the other three that Yeshua now sets up in Hebron, in Shechem, and in Kedesh Naphtali. And the three cities on the east side are in Ramot Gilad and Golan and Hermon, and the city in the south, which is, I forget its name, it's not on the map, Betzer. Betzer Bamidbar B'Mishor Mimateh Reuven, Ramot B'Gilad Mimateh Gad, and Golan B'Bashan Mimateh Menashe. Betzer is down here near the Arnon River, Ramot in the Gilad, and Golan in the Hermon. So I have essentially six cities set up, geographically interspaced, pretty much on par, you know, sort of equidistant from each other, three on the east side of the Jordan, and three in the center of the country, along the top of the mountain ridge that runs from the bottom of Har Yehuda, all the way through into the Galil. That's what we saw last week, and then we went into the discussion of the Arei Levim, the Levitical cities, and there were 42 Levitical cities given by the various tribes. Those Arei Levim are also designated as Arei Miklat, as the Gemara instructs us. At the very end of the shiur last week, I suggested that there is a parallel between this structure. Again, I want to point out Pesukim. Parak is the Arei Miklat, and Parak of Aleph, the Arei Levim. I suggest that there was a parallel between the structure here and the relationship between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Levim. Remember, in the text, it doesn't tell me that these Levitical cities are also Ari Miklat. Just says that there is 48 cities given to the Levim, 42 six of them are the existing Arei Miklat, plus another 42, so in total 48 Levitical cities. And the Gemara tells me, the Mishnah tells me that those Arei Levim were also doubling as Arei Miklat as well. When I suggested that the relationship between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Levim actually goes back to Chumash, and that the link between them is a link that is created by the juxtaposition, not only here, but also in Chumash itself. And I wanted to show you that because I think it's very interesting, not only in terms of the link, but also the order, the sequence. Before I do that, I'm going to add one more piece to this equation, and that is Prakim Yud Gimel to Yud Tet. What's the theme, subject matter of the unit of Yehoshua between chapters 13 and chapter 19? This is going back to last year, but the very last thing we did last year. What's the last thing Yehoshua does in those chapters? The primary thing that Yehoshua does in those chapters, which, if you remember, included the Shiloh plan.
It was the
Nachla. Right? It was the division of the land of Israel by Nachla. Or Goral. The entire division of the land, each tribe, according to its portion, by Goral, by cartographers, by messengers who went out and mapped the land, came back, they drew lots, and each tribe was then told where to go in terms of settling their territorial area. So if I look at the sequence of the last section of Yehoshua, what I have is, first, the division of land by tribes, which makes sense, then the division of the allocation of the six Arei Miklat, and then the allocation of the additional 40, well, of the total of 48 Levitical cities, which are the 42 additional cities plus the six Arei Miklat. Why are these two events juxtaposed to here? Why is the allocation of the Levitical cities and the Arei Miklat juxtaposed to the division of the tribes? This is not a trick question.
Well, the Levium didn't get land, right?
Right. In other words, what's the theme of this entire section?
The organization.
Every tribe has to have a place to go. Every tribe has to have a home. So I have the tribes that have specific contiguous land that is given their location. And then the only tribe that doesn't have a place to go is the Levium. So I have to assess, I have to allocate to them cities from within the tribal region or tribal territory of the other Shvatim. So first I'm going to give each tribe its territory, and then of course I have to give the Levium. Agreed? The only hitch in that sequence is, why is the Arei Miklat in the middle? The logic of the sequence would go from the division of the tribes to the last tribe to receive their territory, which would be Levi. Why did I stick the Arei Miklat in the middle? I didn't stick it in the middle. Yeshua stuck it in the middle, but you understand the question. So I leave that open for a moment, but take a look from now and in Bamidbar, the end of Sefer Bamidbar, starting with Perek Lamed Dalet. And that's why I said that if we walk through the end of the Sefer Bamidbar, we'll see that the sequence is actually not arbitrary. Lamed Dalet.
Okay. for it.
Bamidbar Lamed Daled. We'll get to Lamed Hay in a moment. All right, Debar Hashem o Moshe Lemor, Tzavet Bnei Yisrael v'yamarta lehem, ki atem ba'im el ha'aretz Kna'an, zot ha'aretz asher tipol lechem b'nachala, eretz Kna'an l'gvuloteha. God instructs Moshe, when you come into the land of Israel, this is the land that you will be given, eretz Kna'an, according to its boundaries, l'gvuloteha. And then the rest of this parak defines exactly what those boundaries are. Pa'at Negev, Mimrit Bar Sinai, De'edom, Me'elachem, Gvul Negev, Gvul Yam. It's a whole parak that describes in detail the borders and boundaries of the land of Israel. We actually looked at this parak very early on in our study of Yoshua. And that is basically the subject of the entire parak. The end of the parak, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayitzav Moshe B'nei Yisrael Emor, Zot Ha'aretz Asher Titnachalu Ota B'Goral. This is a land that you will divide up by Goral. Asher Tzivah Hashem Latet L'Tishat HaMatot V'Chatzi HaMateh for the 9.5 remaining tribes. Ki Lakchu Mateh B'nei HaRuveni Levet Avotam U'Mateh B'nei HaGadi Levet Avotam V'Chatzi Mateh Menashe Lakchu Nachalatam, because the other 2.5 tribes have already taken their territory east of the Yarden. So in total, I have 2.5 east of the Yarden and 9.5 west. 2.5 here, 9.5 there. Total of 12. Without Shevet Levi. Because, of course, we know that there are 13 tribes. Correct? And there are always 13 tribes. There are never more than 12 mentioned in any given moment. There are 13 because Yosef gets split to Ephraim and Manasseh. Anytime we talk about the tribes, from the vantage point of their territorial Nachla, there are 12 without Levi. Anytime we talk about the tribes as a familial unit, there are 12 sons of Yaakov, Yosef being one of them, Ephraim and Manasseh being included. So that's how they're always lined up, either 12 or 13. There's 13 in total, but there's only ever 12 mentioned in any given time.
And the reason for that?
There are 12 tribes. Yosef takes his portion and splits it. So at that point, one goes in, one goes out, because there are only ever 12 tribes. The breastplate of the Kohen Gadol has 12 stones in it. Can't fit 13. It doesn't fit. 4, 4, 4. Right. It wouldn't fit.
The reason. 12 tribes can fit 13.
That's right. What are you going to stick in? It's like that. You have to have a column unto himself. You can't do that. All right. So chapter 34, essentially, topic, subject, title for chapter 34 of Bamidbar, subject matter, Nachla and Goral. Agreed? Next, chapter 35. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Sorry, this is the end of chapter 34. This is the division of Elazar, Kohen, and each tribe, and who the Nasi is for each tribe. That is connected to what we saw before. Let's move on to chapter 35. Continuing, God instructs Moshe. Tzavet b'nei Yisrael v'natnu l'leviyim minachalat achuzatam arim l'shavet. Go instruct the tribes, each one, to give a set of cities and their suburbs to the Levim for living in. These cities will be for the Levim. Why? If you go down a little bit further, it doesn't tell me why here. But these are the designated cities of the Levim. So at least through Pasuk Hey. gives me the dimensions of each city. Migvishei ha'arim asher titnu levi'im. What are the dimensions of each city? Migvishei ha'arim. Each city has a certain amount of court, of space attached to it. So at least psukim olav through hey, what do I have? Arei levi'im. And then, pasuk vav. Ve'et ha'arim asher titnu levi'im. Which cities will you give to the Levim? Et shesh arei miklat asher titnu lanus shama haratzeach, the six arei miklat. Ve alehem titnu arba'im v'shtayim ir, an additional 42 cities. Kol ha'arim asher titnu levi'im arba'im u'shmona ir eten ve'et mikvishehem. So in total, in fact, I have not only the relationship between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Leviim, the fact that the six Arei Miklat would be designated to as Arei Leviim and on top of them another 42 cities, that already is set out by the Torah. Yeshua implements, but it's set out by the Torah. Everybody with me? You know where I'm going? Do you understand where I'm going?
No.
No? I see a lot of confused faces.
I have a switch of color.
You understand what I'm trying to do? I have a story in Navi, in Sefer Yehoshua. Designated the tribes by according to the Nachla. Then I give the. Then I set out the Arei Miklat. Then I set out the Arei Leviim. And it happens to be that the six, and I give to the Leviim six Arei Miklat. Then I, where does all that come from? So I suggested that all of this is actually coming from Chumash. That it's set. The plan is set out by the Torah. So what we're looking at now is the plan. We've already seen the implementation. Then we're going to look at the parallel between the two. And of course, as I've said many times, anytime you look at the parallel between two passages or texts in Tanakh, that is usually because you are intending to highlight the differences. There's never really a parallel in Tanakh that doesn't highlight differences. So that's
here's what we're talking about. So here's the plan set out.
Here's the plan, and there's the implementation.
And so how many years was the implementation?
What years? Well, how many years is all of Sefer Yehoshua? 20? Seven for conquest, seven for division, a couple of years extra for kind of cleanup. It's not.
So that's how many years later this was?
Yeah, approximately. Yehoshua doesn't take us very far time-wise away from Moshe. Yehoshua's whole leadership is only 20, 30 years. We're nearing towards the end of his life, right? Yeshua comes into play when they cross over the yard, and he's 80, and he dies at 110. So, all right, let's go back to Perek Lamed Hey. That so up through Perek Chet, we have the pasuk Chet v'harim asher titnu me'achuzat bnei Yisrael me'et harav tabu me'et ha'ma'at tamitu. Larger tribes will give more cities; smaller tribes will give fewer cities. As we ended up seeing, they all approximately give four cities per tribe, give or take. Now, pasuk tet. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe lemor, daber bnei Yisrael v'yamarta alehem, ki atem ovrim et ha'yarden arza Kanaan. When you cross over the Yarden and come into the land of Kanaan, v'hikritem lachem arim arei miklat di'en alachem. You shall designate special cities of refuge. Ready with me? Let me by paraklamet. Hey, pasuk yud aleph. V'kritem lachem arei miklat, arim arei miklat tiyena lachem v'nas shama rotzeach maken nefesh bishkaga. These arei miklat are designated for the purpose of
unintentional murder
or manslaughter. Some element of negligence is required for the rotzeach bishkaga, as it's called, to run and escape. V'yalachem harim lemiklat migoel. So that the blood redeemer, the Goel Adam, will not be able to kill the person who committed murder. V'lo yamut ha-ratzeach ad amdo lifnei ha'eda l'mishpat. Until he has the opportunity to stand before the courts in justice. It doesn't go away scot-free. It has to be assessed whether or not this was in fact accidental or manslaughter, or whether this was an intentional murder. All of that has to be determined by a Beit Din and not by the Go El Hada. V'harim asher titnu shesh arim miklati analachem. You have to have six cities. Shlosh harim titnu me'ev le'yarden. V'shlosh harim titnu be'eretz Kna'an arim miklati yena. Three on the east side of the Yarden and three on the west side of the Yarden. And then the rest of this perek deals with the details of and the parameters of what it means to be rotzeach b'shogeg. What are the halachic parameters that define shogeg versus mezid versus ones? What are the various categories halachically that would define the types of murder that one has? And of course, we talked last week about the parallels to various terms of legal terms today: murder, manslaughter, negligence causing death, accidental death, all kinds of different terms which parallel in many cases the parameters that the Torah sets out. So the end of Perek Lamed Hei, from Pasuk Tet till the end, is the Arei Miklat. Agreed? What's the reason for putting the story of the Arei Miklat, which are really seemingly unrelated to the Levitical cities? Why did the Torah juxtapose them together? Because these Arei Miklat are included in the list of the Levitical cities.
It wasn't really volunteer. Each tribe was told.
You have to give over four cities or so, right? Which cities? It's not clear that the tribes had a choice as to which cities. They probably did, but that they were given the mandate to give over a number of cities is set out in the Torah. Now, what's interesting about this division, the parallel is very striking. The sequence of the division of the land by Goral and the Arei Miklat, setting out the Arei Miklat and the setting out of the Levitical cities, these events which in Yehoshua take place one after the other, in the Torah are defined as a mitzvah to be designated one after the other. So it's a very striking parallel sequence.
Except
the
Arei Miklat,
except that this order is reversed. Exactly right. Then in the Torah, the Arei Levim are set out first, then the Arei Miklat, and Yehoshua implements them in reverse order.
Why?
That's a good question. Now you know where I went, or where I was going. You see the problem?
Well,
it may be an insignificant problem. It may be a minor issue.
Are you making it a bigger problem than it is? I mean,
well, that's a good question. Am I making it a bigger problem than it is? Maybe, except for one problem. Take a look at the beginning of chapter 21.
Are we going back to you?
You're sure. Immediately following...
Can I ask just
a question? Sure.
This city of refugees, they are the same as the city belonging to the Levi?
They are included in the total list of the Levitical city.
Okay.
Correct.
So
there's 42 plus these six.
Yes, but they all are ruled by the Levi.
Correct.
Okay. So it makes sense.
That piece of it we'll talk. The relationship between the Levim and the Metzeach B'Shogeg is a very important one. That we're going to come back to. But the order here, is it significant that Yeshua changes the order? Maybe not. However, there are two indications to my mind that there is some significance here. The first is, if you go back to the end of Perek Chaf Aleph, the very end of the Perek. Actually, I don't know if I read these last two psukim. So we'll do them now. The last two psukim of Perek Chaf Aleph are Vayiten Hashem liYisrael et kol ha'aretz asher nishba latet la'avotam vayirashua vayeshvu ba. God gave to Israel, this is a summary pasuk, God gave to Israel all of the land that he had promised. Vayanach Hashem lehem misaviv kochol asher nishba la'avotam. God gave them respite from their enemies around them as he had promised. V'lo amad ish bifnehem mikol oivehem. At kol oivehem natan Hashem biyadam, God had given all of their enemies over into their hands. And then pasuk mem gimel, v'lo nafal davar mikol adavar hatov asher diper Hashem al beit Yisrael akol ba. Everything done exactly as God had instructed. Nothing fell short of the mark. Now, that by and of itself is a very positive statement of what was a summary of Yeshua's life. Everything that was expected of him, he did. Everything expected of God, he did. It was done. Everything ended b'chitov, as they say. The pasuk is somewhat problematic because we know that it's not exactly accurate. We know that, for example, there were whole sections of the land of Israel that were not conquered by the Israelites. There were whole sections of local indigenous Canaanite populations that remained. So the pasuk is problematic to some extent, but it certainly gives me a flavor or a sense that everything so far has been, let's say, for the most part, according to the Torah, according to the plan. So that would indicate to me that I don't have to make a big deal out of the switch. I mean, that could have been, and he just reversed it. Not a major issue, not a major problem. Now let's go back to the beginning of the parak. Beginning of the parak, Chafalef, correct. And here you have a very strange dialogue. Right, again, Perek Chaf, chapter 20, is the designation of the Ari Miklat. Immediately following the designation of the Ari Miklat, Perek Chaf Aleph begins, Veigshu Rashei Avot HaLeviyim El Elazar HaKohen Ve'ol Yoshua Benun Ve'Rashei Avot HaMatot Livnei Yisrael. The heads of the tribes of the Leviyim approach Yoshua and approach Elazar. And they spoke to them in Shiloh, and they said, Hashem tziva biyad Moshe latet lanu arim lashavet. God commanded you, through Moshe, to give us cities to dwell in. Umikri shehen levim teinu. Veitnu b'nei Yisrael levim minachalatam opi Hashem el ta'arim ha'elem met migreshem. So Israel designated the following cities for the Levim. What's strange about this dialogue? What's strange about this dialogue?
It's like perhaps Yeshua forgot about them?
Right. That's exactly what it intimates. The Levim come complaining to Yeshua. Yeshua, hey, what about us? We were supposed to get our Nachla. You forgot about us. Did Yeshua forget about the Levim? What prompted the Levim to come clamoring to Yeshua and to Elazar Kohen and say, hey, wait a second, we're supposed to get 48 cities or 42 cities. What, do we chop liver? What prompted the dialogue? The other tribes don't come and claim, hey, where's our Nachla? The Rotzeach B'Shogegs don't come clamoring to Yeshua and say, hey, where are our cities? What prompted the Levim at this moment to wake up and say, hey, what about us? So what I'm suggesting is that the prompt to this dialogue lies here, in that Moshua has been following a plan that has been carefully orchestrated by the Torah, step by step. You come into the land of Israel, the first thing you do is you take the army of Israel and you conquer. The 2.5 tribes, Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh, sending their armies, chalutzim lifnei b'nei Yisrael, as the front lines, we discussed. The first thing you have to do is to conquer the land militarily so that you have control. The second thing you have to do, once you have control, is divide the land according to the tribes. That's set out in Bamidbar Perek Lamed Daled. The third thing you have to do is that again allocate those tribes to each section of territory. Again, Yeshua does as the Torah had set out. In fact, when the people were procrastinating and not doing that part of the plan, Yeshua goes to great lengths to push them towards that part of the plan. He moves the Mishkan from Gilgal to Shiloh, etc. What's the next part of the plan? After you finish the division of the land of Israel by Goralot, you set out the Arei Leviim. And when you finish that part of the plan, you take six of those Arei Leviim and you designate them as Are Miklat. So says the Torah. What did Yeshua do? He follows the plan almost verbatim. He conquers the land of Israel in a national conquest, sets out the division of the land according to the tribes. Then he designates the Arei Miklat. I have no doubt in my mind that Yeshua's next step was to designate the Arei Leviim. But the moment he jumped from the tribes to the Arei Miklat, and he veered from the pre-designated sequence, the Leviim got worried. Hey, what about us in the interim? And they know the plan. They know the sequence.
But was there a historical event that occurred that maybe had a switch that?
I don't think it was an historical event. I think it was an intentional switch by Yehoshua's part, and that's why, and I'll come to what I think the reason for it.
Was there a need for Arei Miklat that was greater than to do the Arei Leviim? There must have been something behind Yehoshua's. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think there is something behind it. What it is yet, I'm not sure. I am. We have a couple of theories we'll put forward. But it's possible that there were already beginning problems. I don't think so. I don't think that was the issue. I don't think it was a social issue. I think it was a conceptual issue. It's not the first time the instructions have been changed in the sequence of their implementation by the Navi. The most significant change in that regard was the Mishkan. God instructed Moshe to build the Mishkan. He starts with the utensils. When Moshe builds the Mishkan, he starts with the structure and then the utensils, and then he builds the utensils. And the Chazal comment that the order was given to Moshe in order of importance: the Kelim first, the Aron, the Shulchan, etc. The construction followed the practicality of, if I build an Aron, I have nowhere to put it. So you first build the structure so that when you build the Aron, you have somewhere to put it. So at some point, sometimes you do change the sequence, but not arbitrarily without some kind of rationale. So we'll come back to the question of the rationale. But that's why it may be less significant, but I think the fact that the Leviim woke up to say, hey, you forgot about us, is an indication that this is a change of plan from the sequence the Torah set out, and therefore caught notice. And if it caught their notice, then it really belongs, it really needs to catch our notice too. There was a question. So let's talk a little bit about the relationship between the Leviim and the Arei Miklat. We know that the six Arei Miklat are set out to be Arei Leviim. The six Arei Miklat are designated to be Levitical cities also. That the Torah sets out. That's very clear. The reverse, that the Levitical cities end up being additional cities of refuge, that the Torah doesn't say. That's part of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's in the Mishnah and the Gemara, and I'll show it to you in a moment. But what's the rationale of making the Arei Miklat also Arei Leviim?
That's where we ended last time.
Right. Correct. What's the rationale of linking those two pieces? And here, what I've shown you is that the link is, what I hope I've given you is more evidence that the link is not an accident.
But it's normal that the more moral people, the high priests, redeem the lowest people. It's their role. It's
an educational role.
Yes.
I think that's certainly part of the picture. That the Leviim have a educational role to play in society. They are supposed to be the instructors. They are supposed to be the spiritual role models. They are exempt from, they are not given their own territorial land, and they are exempt from military service so that they can be free both from agriculture, parnasa, and military obligations in order to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen class, if you will, in context of Mitzrayim. They are therefore assumed that they will instruct, or that they will be sort of, as you put it, spiritual role models. There are a number of psukim in Tanakh that talk about the Kohanim and or the Leviim, because they're really one unit, in this kind of educational role. Yoru Mishpatecha Yaakov, by the brachas that Moshe gives to Bnei Yisrael in Vizota Bracha, and Yom Mishpatech Yaakov Torah Chali Yisrael, they will instruct the Torah to Israel.
So then, why would it be strange that they combine?
Right. So that that's the first explanation as to why they're combined. That there is a educational moment. You place these people for whom the circumstances are such that they are the lower aspects of society, perhaps. Or the notion of galut, in this case, is perceived in an educational role or rehabilitation role. Remember that you don't go to exile for a tzerech b'shogeg if it was purely accidental. Purely accidental death or accident causing death does not have to go to exile to Arim HaKadosh. Exile to Arim Miklat requires some element of negligence involved. Whether it would be equivalent to manslaughter or negligence causing death or murder too, I'm not sure. But it certainly requires some element of negligence. And therefore, the assumption being some element of rehabilitation as well. That's part of the picture. And from that perspective, it makes sense that not only are the Levim, not only are the Arei Miklat given over to the Levim, but there is also an expansion of the Arei Miklat to include all the cities of the Levim. The Torah sets out 6 Arei Miklat. The Halacha sets out 48 Arei Miklat. You understand the transition that takes place. Take a look, for example, in the source page in source number 4. Yeah. By the way, there's also another thing in common that the Levim and the Rotzeach B'Shogeg have. Besides the role of the need for rehabilitation versus the educators and the spiritual mentors and role models, there's a much simpler, almost practical common denominator between the Levim and the Rotzeach B'Shogeg.
Neither one of them are
making money. Right? They're both poor. That's true. Why? How do you assume that neither one of them is making money?
Well, the Levim are getting from the rest of the population.
Right, and the Tzerech B'Shogeg?
I assume the others aren't employed at the time.
What is it about the economy that tells you that the Levim and the Tzerech B'Shogeg are not making money? Maybe they've got businesses. Maybe they're running, .com businesses and making a mint. Because they don't have a nachla. Because economy is agricultural. If you don't have land, you're a nomad. If you don't have land, you're a pauper. If you don't have land, you are landless, titleless, classless, statusless. At some point or another, we've discussed that. In an agricultural society, land ownership is everything.
But that's ironic for the Levium, though, when you think about it, because you look to them as being the highest.
Spiritually, economically, they're lowest.
Right.
So that's exactly why the Torah reverses it. The Torah takes the Levium out of a class that have no land and says, no, they're not allowed to have land. They have because they have their own nachla.
Right.
And their nachla is, as the Torah says many places, Hashemu nachalato. So you elevate them to their own nachla. The Rotzeach B'Shogeg, on the other hand,
doesn't
have land either, because he is being exiled from his land. What's the paradigm? Rotzeach B'Shogeg exiled from their land. What's the paradigm? What's the model? What's the first instance or example of Rotzeach being exiled from their territory?
Cain.
The tzeach b'shogeg is essentially kayin. Navinad tiyeh ba'aretz. You will be
wandering.
A wanderer in the land. You become landless and therefore statusless. And therefore everything else that happens to him. The parallel is that the tzeach b'shogeg ends up with the punishment of kayin. Correct.
That has been set out by Torah.
Correct. So instead of incarcerating them, as they do in society today, we put them into the Irmiklat so that they can spend a couple of years with the Levium.
Maybe that's a better idea.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt. But again, we're not talking about people who are completely innocent. If we're talking about somebody who's completely innocent and for whom there was an accident that was uncontrollable, they don't have to spend half their life in exile. That's not the issue. On the other hand, we're not talking about people who committed premeditated murder for which the Torah sets out capital punishment. This is this middle category, which in today's society, you would incarcerate them for any period of time. In the Torah society, which did not have an operative system of jails and incarceration, they had to rehabilitate them in some way, and this was the mechanism by which they did so.
The rehabilitation today is really a model. After that, I mean,
yes,
even though
100%.
Yeah, some of them are on work.
Right. Correct, and the work detail, and in contexts where you hope that there will be role models that will elevate them from society, the model is exactly the same as set out by the Torah and the Ari Mikvah. 100%. Absolutely. Then the halacha takes it one step further, and in source number four, the Gemara says. Imtzenu lemedim, sorry, sorry. It was source number three. Source number four. Vetuleika. Are there not more? Torah sets out six. Says the Gemara. Are there not more? Voktiv alehem titnu arba'im b'shtayim ir. On top of the six Arei Miklat, you will give another 42 cities. Which means the Gemara's understanding of that verse is not only do you give 42 cities to the Levim, but you give 42 cities to the Levim that also serve as Arei Miklat. For them, there's a total of 48 Arei Miklat and 48 Arei Levim, which means that the linkage between the two has now become even greater, because now every Levitical city becomes an Ir Miklat.
So it's 48 Levim and Miklat. It's the same thing.
At the end of the day, they end up superimposing one on the other. In the Torah and in Yeshua, they seem to be separate entities. Ir Miklat, Ir Levim, there's a six-city overlap. Says the Gemara, not so fast. We're going to take all 42 and make them into Arei Miklat as well. Right. With one halachic distinction which the Gemara sets out. Amar Abaye, halalu kol tot ben ladat ben shelo ladat, halalu ladat kol tot v'shelo ladat einan kol tot. Meaning the six main cities of refuge. If a person happens to come across them, even if he doesn't know that they're in Ir Miklat, the borders are set out in such a way that the moment they walk in, the doors are shut. There's a whole judicial system set up. They guard the place. You can walk into the Ir Miklat, whether you know you've walked into Ir Miklat or you don't know that you've walked into Ir Miklat, you're now safe. Whereas Levitical cities, koltot ladat, shelo lotot en koltot, they only afford asylum knowingly, meaning that he knows that they have the person running there has to run there intentionally. So that's a technicality. Call it a technicality. I don't know in practical terms whether that distinction ever really played itself out. But the primary message from this Gemara is that in fact all 48 cities are considered a Arei Miklat at some point or another.
If I don't understand well, the sixth first city, the man who committed the crime is more protected than in the other cities?
Somewhat. Somewhat, yeah. Exactly how that operates is unclear. But there's the distinction between intentional asylum and unintentional asylum.
How's it determined where you're sent? Is it based on location?
It wasn't a question of where you were sent. You weren't sent. You ran.
Wherever was closest.
Closest to your miklat to your location.
You could get there.
That's right. Because the goal of them is on your back.
And that's why they were divided.
That's why they were interspersed. That's why they were.
Reach them fast.
Correct.
Everyone know where they were? Was this
There's an interesting Mishnah, which I'll show you in a moment. But there's a famous drasha which is quoted in, I don't know how many times I've seen it in all kinds of, the Medrash says and the Little Medrash says, and all, that there was signage everywhere for the Ir Miklat, but there was no signage anywhere for Yerushalayim. You ever hear that word?
No.
That there was signage all through the land of Israel, Ir Miklat this way, Ir Miklat this, closest Ir Miklat this. And the Gemara says there were signs everywhere for the closest Ir Miklat, but there were never any signs for Shiloh or for the Beis HaMikdash.
Maybe it's assumed that they would know. Maybe it's known.
No. So that would be the logical assumption, right? So the Medrash's assumption is the other way around. Now, with regards to the Ir Miklat, you want the person to be able to get to the Ir Miklat without having to ask directions. Whereas to Yerushalayim, you want them to ask directions, like Eli in the beginning of, Elkanah, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, because you want him to kind of encourage others to come. So you want to say, hey, where's Shiloh? Where's Yerushalayim? And the response, of course, will be, I'll show you, right? In fact, it ended up being, I don't have a clue, but that was a historical problem that we'll get to in Sefer Shmuel, the abandonment of Shiloh rather than its centrality.
But the system was set up and respected.
This system was set up and I assume respected, although we don't really have episodes that discuss its operation. We have this passage of how it was set up. There's no discussion per se of any example in Tanakh, but that doesn't mean it didn't operate, in which we have the story of so and so went to such and such a mikvah. But we know that it was set up that way.
Were their families also allowed to join them later? Or, they ran, so their family.
They can visit, but I don't think the family doesn't come and live with them.
No.
Exile is exile. So from that perspective, why does Yehoshua reverse the order? I understand that if I assume that every Levitical city is also an Ir Miklat, then I don't have any philosophical reason for the reversal of the order, but I think there's a practical one.
They were needed first?
If you put the Ir Miklat up first, and then expand them into the Ir Leviim, I think the notion that every ear Leviim becomes an Ir Miklat is clearer. Because it's part of the process. You begin the process of setting up the Ir Miklat, the first six are the ones the Torah designate, and the next 42 are the Leviim. So the fact that the Ir Leviim become Ir Miklat, I think, lent itself possibly to this sequence rather than this sequence. I think it enhances the message that every ear of the Leviim was to be a subset of the Ir Miklat, not the other way around. This transition between the Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, I think, gets reflected in this transition. Possible. And of course, the Leviim don't know what's going on, so Yeshua has to spell it out for them. No, I don't think it's importance. I think it's practicality. I think it's the message. He wanted the Leviim to know that their cities were going to be Ir Miklat too.
But it makes sense that they should be asking, what about us? Because they didn't realize
Correct. That
the Ir Miklat was really going to be Ir Leviim
Correct.
Also.
Correct.
It's so that's they had a basis to ask their question.
Exactly right. In other words, this transition that we see here in the Gemara, I think that's what's going on here. When Yeshua takes this instructions, which is the Ir Leviim first, then the Ir Miklat, and he wants to convey the message that every Levitical city is going to be an Ir Miklat, he sets up the Ir Miklat first, and he sets up the Levitical cities as a subset of the Ir Miklat. Well, Levim come along and ask why, so he explains it. So that's what I think beneath the surface might be going on. Okay, which leaves us 20 minutes to discuss another issue with the Ir Miklat, and that actually is one of the more interesting pieces. Take a look at the Gemara, Mishnah and the Gemara in source number 2. So the Mishnah says the following. Let's go through the Mishnah itself. It doesn't add much to our discussion, but it's such an interesting, almost storyline to the Ir Miklat that I thought it would be of value. Neichan Golin, where do the people who commit unintentional murder, where are they exiled to? The translation, by the way, is from the Sansino Talmud, and I'm not sure I like some of the terminology they use. Golin is exile. It has a different connotation to banishment. I'm not sure it's of the same tenor. But all right. Where do they go? L'Arei Miklat. And the Arei Miklat are Shalosh Be'Ever HaYarden U'Shalosh Be'Eretz Kanan. There are six primary Arei Miklat. Again, later on we see in the Gemara that there are an additional 42, but they are of lesser status to the six primary Arei Miklat. As it says, it's Shalosh Harim Titnu Me'Ever LeYarden V'Shalosh Harim Titnu Be'Eretz Kanan, three on one side, three on the other. Ad shelo nivchu shalosh be'eretz Yisrael lo ayu shalosh be'ever ha'yarden koltot. Not only are there six, but the two sets of three are interconnected. The three that Moshe sets out don't go into operation until the three that Yehoshua sets out. So all six operate at the same time. As it says, Shesh Arei Miklat Tihiyena, there are a total of six, Ad Shiyush Shishtan Koltot Ke'achat. They all have to be operational. Umuchuvanot Behen Drachin Zumizu. And there are roads that are directed towards each one. This is what somebody asked before about the signage. As it says, Techin Lachem Lacha Haderech Vishilashta V'chulei. You had to set out roads, signs, easy access to each of these cities. In addition, when somebody commits this kind of accidental murder, they are assigned two Tamidei Chachamim, two rabbis, two scholars, two leaders, elders of the Beit Din, who would accompany him on his journey to the Ir Miklat. Why? Shema yehadgenu baderech, lest the Goel Adam catch up. So their role is to protect him. So instead of sending two officers or policemen, we send two elderly rabbis. And they would speak to him along the way. They would schmooze with him. He would speak himself. As it says, again, they would review the case, and they would talk over the story, and they would... All right. Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda omer, betchila echad shogeg v'echad mezid makdim la'arei miklat. Initially, the process was that whether you committed accidental murder or intentional murder, whether you were a rotzeach b'shogeg or a paid executioner, didn't make a difference. You went to the Ir Miklat. Ubezdin shochin mevino tamisham. Bezdin would actually go and bring you there, and would bring you from there. In other words, that once you entered into the miklat, you were now safe. Then you would have a court trial. If they found you to be guilty of intentional murder, it's a capital punishment. And if you were exempt altogether, it was an accident, you get sent home. And if you're guilty of this kind of negligence requiring galut, then you would go back to the imiklat, as it says. So the notion was that everybody went to the imiklat because you couldn't distinguish. You couldn't take law into your own hands. There had to be a trial to determine who was shogeg, who was mezid, and who was ones. That trial would take place in the Beit Din of the Ir Miklat. So everybody ran to the Ir Miklat, and then from there you sorted out the wheat from the chaff. Tanu Rabbanan, and the Gemara says as follows: Shalosh arim hivdil Moshe be'ever ha'yarden, u'kanidan hivdil Yeshua be'eretz Kanan. These three cities east of the Yarden and these three cities west of the Yarden that Yehoshua set out, mechuvanot hayu k'min shtei shurot shebekerem, they parallel each other like two rows in a vineyard. Two straight lines. Chevron b'Yehuda k'neged Betzer b'Midbar, Shechem b'Har Ephraim k'neged Ramot b'Gilad, Kedesh b'Har Naphtali k'neged Golan b'Bashan. Betzer, Hebron, Hamot Gilad, Shechem, Hermon or Golan, Kedesh. So not only are they three parallel each other in a straight line on each side of the Yarden, not only are they equidistant from each other, but they're pretty much parallel along the line straight up and down the country. Sure. Test. We mentioned it earlier, and we'll do it earlier. Not the problem. That's easy. Next. Ushloshtan. Vishilashta. What does it mean? What does the word vishilashta mean? Sheyu mishulashin. That they have to be mishulashin. Mishulashin doesn't mean a triangle. It means that they are equidistant from each other. Sheyehem midarom lechevron, umichevron leshchem, umichevron leshchem, kimishchem lekedesh, umishchem lekedesh, kimikedesh letzafon. The distance from the south to Hebron, from Hebron to Shechem, from Shechem to Kedesh should be equidistant from each other. And the same thing here. Give or take, the concept being that you don't want there to be a preference for one region over the other in terms of access to an Ir Miklat. You want them equidistant to each other, equally dispersed, parallel each other on each side of the yard. And of course, that raises the question of questions, which is, with all of this effort to be equitable, there is a gross inequity in the system. Namely, what's my gross inequity in the system? How many Arei Miklat do I have east of the Yarden? Three. How many Arei Miklat do I have west of the Yarden? Three. How many tribes do I have east of the Yarden? Two and a half. How many tribes do I have west of the Yarden? Not eight, nine and a half. So I have 9.5 tribes for 3 Arei Miklat west, and 2.5 tribes for 3 Arei Miklat east. Is that fair? That's wait. So look at the Gemara. Be'eva hayarden klat be'eretz Yisrael klat, 3 and 3. Amar Abaye. What's the solution? What's the reason? Begilad shchichei ratzchim. There are more murderers in the Gilad than there are in the land of Israel. And they're all going to laugh. What?
Profiling in the worst order.
What? There are more murderers on the east side of the Yarden, and therefore they need more Arei Miklat. Adina, you're spot on.
Who says that? Who knows that?
It's a Gemara. Wait. How do they know that? So the Gemara says it based on a pasuk. Dechtiv, as it says, Gilad Kiryat Po'ale Aven. Gilad is a city of men of iniquity. Akuvamidam.
Wow.
Akuvamidam, which is like pierced with blood. To which the Gemara Darshan is Akuvamidam Shu Okvin, meaning they would ambush. Laharog nefashot, to kill.
It would be like living in East St. Louis versus University City.
Yeah, but that's the way it was set out.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the amazing part. It was set out that way. Moshe set it out that way.
The tribes were set there.
That didn't happen by accident.
Means that those tribes were worse than the other tribes. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Isn't that remarkable?
The population was the same.
The population is much smaller than the West. In other words, the population of these 2.5 tribes is much smaller than the population west.
So you're pre-ordering
9.5 tribes versus 2.5 tribes.
You're saying that's
so it's this that the kind of capita is a lot higher.
Per capita is a lot more murderous.
The population
that means
is less.
Preordained.
It's wild, isn't that wild?
Preordained. This
yeah, 100%.
That's Reuven God's Menashe.
Preordained, predetermined, whatever. I think it's remarkable and wild.
Right, was it a self-selected?
You're on the good side or the bad side of Menashe.
You're either good or bad.
Oh, man, this is tough. This is tough. Gilad is part of Reuven, by the way. It's misleading here because it says
Menashe.
It's misleading here. It's structured like this. Menashe comes out like that and into the north, and this is the area of Reuven. So it's actually Shevet Reuven that is considered the Gilad for this purpose. So the issue is Reuven. Which, of course, raises another question. If Reuven needs an extra Ir Miklat, so give him an extra Ir Miklat, what do I need to punish Menashe and God for? And, of course, the obvious question, which is the profiling and the assertion, which is really remarkable. But there's another optical illusion here. What's the Gemara's assumption? That why do I need extra Arei Miklat? Because Bikilad Shchichei Rotzchem. There are more murderers in Gilad. Akuvamidam. Okvin leharog nefashot. They're following. They're lying in wait, in ambush, to commit murder. What's
the
problem?
I
have no idea. But who is the? What's the problem? There's a problem with this Gemara. It doesn't fit logically. Forget the philosophical bombshell. It doesn't work. It's missing a logical piece. Who are the Arei Miklat for? Who are the Arei Miklat designated for? Fleeing for what kind of act?
Murder.
No,
unintentional.
Shogeg. What is the pasuk talking about? Shinchei. Rotschin. I don't care how many murderers there are. The murderers don't stay in the Arei Miklat.
So this is premeditated.
Right? Rotschin is premeditated. They don't belong in the Arei Miklat in the first place. What do I need them? So you tell me that the Gilad is full of Rotschin. Because isn't there? They can be full of Rotschin. So deal with them in the Bezdin system. They don't go to the Arei Miklat in the first place. So why do I need an imiklet for them? So the whole thing is strange. The whole thing is strange.
They were less educated than the others?
Maybe. It's a difficult issue. It's a difficult issue. So I'll share with you three possible answers that the Rishonim discussed to this question. This discussion appears in the Rishonim at length.
Before one flees,
yeah,
the accident occurs.
Right.
Is there anyone who says to him, you should flee, or is it his decision on his own to flee? In other words, is there some of Beit Din who says, you should flee?
No, the Beit Din takes place after he arrives.
So in the Arei Miklat.
Right.
So
we just saw that in the Mishnah. Initially everybody went to the Arei Miklat, and then they sorted out the murderers from the accidents later on. So that's a simple answer. That is, on the one hand, one answer to this question, that you need extra cities, even though the cities aren't designed for Ritzef B'Shogeg. You need them to be able to accommodate the additional Ritzef B'Mezi, because ultimately everybody has to get there first and then be sorted out. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is anybody remember there's a Rashi on Chumash that talks about the story of the Ritzef B'Shogeg and how it ends up operating divinely. What is the mechanism by which God operates this kind of divine providence over the Ritzef B'Shogeg? It's actually a medrash. Rashi quotes it. It's a Gemara. Source number 7. I've given you the original. So Gemara talks about Shnei Bnei Adam Shagu Et HaNefesh. If you have two, Gemara creates a scenario, possible scenario. Two people committed murder or killed somebody. One committed murder accidentally, the other committed murder intentionally. Laza en edim v'laza en edim. Neither have witnesses. What does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? Kadosh Baruch Hu mazminan lepundak echad. So the Baruch Hu causes them both to end up in the same inn. The one who committed murder sits under the ladder. And the one who committed accidental murder, he's coming down the ladder. And he falls on top of the guy who committed intentional murder, and he kills him. The result of which now is that the guy who fell down the ladder committed accidental murder, and he, with lots of witnesses, so he therefore has to go to exile. So he gets his just deserts. And the guy who committed murder intentionally, he was the victim of the accident, and therefore he gets executed. Of course, you understand that if I have more murderers, then this scenario is going to happen more often, theoretically, and therefore I'll end up with greater need for Arei Miklat. So there are some Rishonim who suggest, well, it'll all work out in the end. What I think the Gemara is alluding to, because of course it creates its own set of problems. What I think the Gemara is suggesting is that in a society where there are more murderers, there is an overall cheapening of the value of life. And there's an overall negligence that seeps into society.
That's really true.
And that is true. So a psychological issue. Insight. And therefore the need for the Arei Miklat become much greater. It's one possibility. Other possibility is that this entire discussion is an optical illusion. And that's this position of the Ramban. The Ramban suggests that this entire passage of the Gemara that says that there is b'gilad shechichat rotzchem, he says he doesn't understand it at all. He says the whole thing is an optical illusion. First of all, he says, why do I need three cities equidistant to each other and at equal levels throughout the land? I don't need those cities equidistant from each other and equally spaced throughout the land because I have more rotzchem on the east side of the Yarden. It doesn't make a difference if I have one or if I have 100. They all have to get to an Ir Miklat. And therefore, my agenda is to set out the Ir Miklat not on the basis of how many murderers there are, but on the basis of the size of the geography. Take your entire land and divide it into quadrants. It doesn't make a difference if it's a territory with 100 people or a major city of 1 million people. I still have to have quadrants. So that the guy running to an Ir Miklat from Moab, or from this area, has the same number of kilometers to run as the guy running from Beersheba. And the guy running from Rabbah has the same number of kilometers to run to Ramat Gilad as the guy running from Shamir to Shechem. So I need them divided geographically, not by population. Because that's the very nature of what an Ir Miklat is. The alternative is to have three Ir Miklat over here and one over here. If I want to keep the proportions of the tribes. One Ir Miklat over here means that the guy living in the south, on the east side of the Yarden in the south, is geographically compromised or disadvantaged regarding the Ir Miklat, because he now has doubled the space to run to a guy living over here. So that's the first thing Ramban sets out. He says the whole thing is an optical illusion. I need them divided. Eretz Evra Hayaden Hatag Dolam Ma'od, he says that every Yarden was the same size as the land of Israel. They have to be divided equally. Number one. Number two, says the Ramban, and this is really wild, he says, at the end of the day, the Gemara is missing a key piece. How many Ir Miklat are there? How many Ir Miklat are there? In total? 48. There aren't six. There are 48. And those 48 Ir Miklat divide how?
Tribes.
Right, but in terms of east and west?
Many more on the west because there's fewer tribes.
Right, so how many were there in total on the east and how many were there in total on the west? Okay, I'll give the answer. There are, of these 48, there are 10.
10 on the east.
East and 38 on the west. Okay, 6 Ir Miklat divide as 3 and 3, but the Levitical cities, 7 on the east, there's 7 additional Levitical cities on the east, and 3 and 7 on the east, and 35 and 3 on the west. You go through the tribes, and you go through who gave which tribes, you'll see, that's where I charted it out for you, that on the east side of the Jordan there were 10 Ir Miklat, and on the west side there were 38. If you include, this is 3 plus 7, and this is 35 plus 3. You with me? Okay, how many tribes are there east of the Jordan?
2.5.
And how many tribes are there west of the Jordan?
9.5,
correct?
Right.
Multiply that by a factor of 4. What's 2.5 times 4?
10.
And what's 9.5 times 4?
36.
So, they were exactly the same number of Ir Miklat, proportionate per capita per tribe, exactly east and west. You just missed the Ir Levi. If you add the Ir Levim, it balances it all out. So you're right. If you only look at the 6 Ir Miklat, you have a problem. But But already in the Torah we have an indication, and Yoshua implemented all the Arei Leviim as Arei Miklat. Once you disperse them, the total of 48, they did Levite of 10 and 38, it is an exact division by tribes of the 2.5 versus 9.
So why would there even be that discussion? They surely knew. I mean, it sounds like a personal...
I'll tell you why. Because there is still a difference between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Leviim.
No, I understand that. But if the Gemara, you know, but if it comes down to this, the Gemara, you expect the Rebbeim and the Gemara to be a little...
I know that they knew this.
Right.
No doubt that they knew this.
No, that wasn't the end of my sentence.
Yeah.
The end of my sentence was that you would expect them to be above that sort of pettiness.
No, I don't think it's pettiness. I think it's actually very profound. At the end of the day, there's still a distinction between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Leviim. The Arei Miklat is kolet ben badat ben shilolodat. The Arei Miklat has a greater status than the Arei Leviim.
I understand what you're saying. So I understand what the difference in terms of the designation is. What I'm saying is to characterize the people of the specific tribe seems a little bit, I don't know.
At the end of the story, I will show you why I think not only did they characterize them that way,
but
that they were right.
Well,
when I show you the number of political assassinations that take place in Tanakh, and all of them, along this line of access, and in this region, it's quite frightening.
So this was just, it was basically an observation.
I think it was an observation.